Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele. Joining me this week is a special guest, once again, Mike Innes. Hi Mike, how are you?
Hi John, all good here, and thanks very much for inviting me back on the pod.
No problem. Mike, in response to your previous appearances on the J2 and J3 review pods were very positive, so we're glad to bring you back in. And plus, there's so much activity in the off-season that I need a lot of help keeping track of it, so thanks for helping me out. Basically, on this week's show, we're going to start our J2 season previews. The 2021 season is hurtling towards us very quickly, Mike. What we decided to do this season is we're going to split our J2 season preview into three parts to give us enough time to talk about each team as much as we like, basically. In this week, part one of our preview, we're going to focus on the top seven from last season's final table. So from Nagasaki in third all the way down to Czechs notes, Mito in ninth, okay? And then we'll be covering the rest of the teams in part two and part three in short order. So Mike, lots of teams to talk about, lots of transfers to talk about. I think we should dive straight in and talk about Nagasaki. Now, we know that they finished third in J2 last season, missing out on automatic promotion by just 4 points in fairly agonising fashion. What do you see them doing in 2021? And are there any transfers that have caught your eye at Transcosmos Stadium?
So, I mean, what a season they had last year, didn't they? On paper, I suppose that this means that they're the strongest team in the division. They were competitive all season long in 2020, weren't they? It was only kind of late in the year that they sort of slipped off the pace a little bit, but they were 15 points ahead of Corfu in fourth. So, but since then, Tegaramori, the coach, has obviously departed back to Sendai. And interestingly, Takeyuki Yoshida has stepped up from among the coaching staff to take over. He was previously the coach at Kobe. As I say, going into the new season, it looks like they've got a strong squad on paper and a number of players that a lot of J1 teams would be very pleased to have. And no really kind of key players seem to have left. We've got the veteran centre-back, Makoto Kakuda. He was released and he's since signed up for a Kansai League team. And then there's a winger, a rookie, Ryoma Kida. He's gone to Sendai. So I'm just kind of a question about, with that sort of stability, are they definites for promotion or whatever? But I'll tell you what, though, John, I think that there are two surprisingly big question marks over Nagasaki. Da-da-da-dum.
Yes, hit me with the mic. Don't keep us in suspense.
So I think that one is that the incomers, you know, the transfers that you were mentioning, they seem just to me to be really focused on squad depth. It's hard to imagine many of these guys like Ryo Shinzato or Ryohei Yamazaki making significant inroads on a regular starting place. I just kind of, it's just a bit hard for me to see that, really. And I totally appreciate they might have blown their budget on making Kaio Cesar and Edigo Jr. permanent deals. But do you know what? You're left with the impression that they've sort of almost expressly tried not to impact upon the first team. And it seems like their approach to the management of the squad is like, let's stand still, or let's pretend that the world hasn't moved on from when Tegaramori was in charge. And I wonder if that's really the best kind of approach to preparation for, you know, a competitive 42-match season.
So you have them as promotion contenders, but not out-and-out favourites for the top two. Is that fair?
I think that's that is a good description. Yeah, I think that's right. And, this is despite the fact that, you know, clearly, unarguably, they do have, you know, lots of really good players. But I think also the appointment of Yoshida seems strange to me. He was on the coaching staff last season, but he wasn't Tegaramori's right-hand man who's left the club and hasn't gone to Sendai. with Toganomori. And his record in Kobe, it's nothing special. And this thing with Ken Tokura, you know, so Ken Tokura has moved to Nagasaki. So Yoshida played alongside Ken Tokura at Kobe like 10 years ago or something like that. That would presumably explain the signing from Cerezo of Tokura. That looks a bit strange to me, given that Keiji Tamada has stayed on there at Nagasaki. You know, they've got this sort of two veteran big name forwards in the same dressing room. I'm not making a reference to them as players, on field players. Obviously, you know, they're very different sorts of players. But if I were Tamada, I'd be sort of thinking, this is a bit weird from the point of view of squad dynamic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think a lot of the points that you've raised are valid. I agree that Yoshida is quite an underwhelming appointment. As you mentioned, his record as Kobe manager is pretty disappointing. I wonder if he's been brought in just as kind of a continuity candidate, and that would explain there haven't been that many transfers, have there, in and out, even though we discussed it. So it's very much a case of not if it ain't broke, don't fix it sort of policy. I think, though, it slips under the radar. But you mentioned Kaio Cesar, getting him on a permanent deal from Kawasaki. That's huge, I think, for the midfield. Yeah. And Edgar Junior making his loan from Yokohama Marinos permanent as well. He has the potential to be a real sort of flat track bully up front in J2. Ken Tokura, I'm not sure how many games he's going to play, because you have to imagine he's the backup for Edgar Junior, right? I guess. And the only player that they've lost, who I think they might miss at times, is Junki Hata, who has gone to Tochigi on loan. He made a few important cameo appearances up front last year. So I think the squad, you know, the ins and outs are pretty minimal. I think we should say Victor Ibarbo. I'm not sure if he's re-signed yet for next year. I think the indications are that he will, but I don't know if anything's official. But they look pretty stacked up front, don't they? So I think we have to say that they're in with a shout of promotion. But I agree. I think it'll be very interesting to see what the front office does if things aren't going well after 2 or 3 months with Takayuki Yoshida, I think, as the manager. Yeah, that was a surprise kind of left field appointment for me.
Okay. Yeah. So I think that in summary, your summary is good. Promotion candidates, just because they got a lot of decent players, but.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's going to be looking forward to playing against them, that's for sure. I think they're definitely going to be a tough nut to crack, especially at home. So, yeah, we'll see. Mike, let's move on and talk about Vanferay Kofu. Now, they finished fourth last year, but as you mentioned, 15 points behind Nagasaki. So they were never really a serious challenger for the top two. They've kept the same manager for 2021, Akira Ito, who I rate pretty highly. Even though they seem to be perennially two or three players short at Kofu somehow, I don't know why, but what do you make of Kofu for this year?
Well, so I think a key question was that I think you, John, asked in the last pod was about, you know, should they have let Dudu go? I think that's a really big question for them, and I've got to say more broadly. A notional promotion chasing team like Corfu, should they really be losing first team players to clubs like Ehime, which they have done, Okayama? There's a Shohei Takeda. He was an important player in their midfield, and his loan has come to an end, and he's gone back to Okayama. And they've lost two players to Machida in Dudu and Ota, the other striker. I'm not suggesting that Corfu are a rich club, but it just seems as if maybe economic reality means that they're maybe not in a position to push on from last season and kind of invest in a promotion winning squad. It seems like quite a long way, quite a long kind of gap for them to catch up.
Yeah, my prediction is pretty simple in my notes. I've just put not quite there yet. I don't know if what do you think?
My equivalent is as things stand, it's hard to see them improving on fourth.
I think that's fair. I think a lot might depend on the two new foreign strikers that they brought in, right? Paulo Baia and Willian Lira, who I know absolutely nothing about. And it's always a kind of, you know, it's kind of a long-standing joke in the J League. So I won't stereotype. You know, Brazilian strikers, they come in, and you never know what you're going to get. To be honest, so we'll see. They could settle and do very well. I noticed they brought in Kazushi Mitsuhira up front as well from Oita. So I think up front, and Gakuto Notsuda as well, on loan from Hiroshima, who, you know, was the next big thing not so long ago. So Jin Izumisawa, I think, has made his loan from Yokohama Marinos permanent, hasn't he, as well? So going forward, providing that the two Brazilian players, or at least one of them, you know, fits in nicely, they should be okay. I'm a bit worried about Kofu's defence, though, because I think, I can't quite remember, but from what I can make out, it was a back three last year, the system that Akihito likes to play, and at least two of the regular starters have gone, haven't they? Like, Yuta Imaizu's gone to Hiroshima, Daiki Nakashio's gone to Yokohama, Kento Uchida, you mentioned, gone to Ehime. So I'm not really sure who's going to fill out these slots in the defence.
No, that's right. They look like big losses to me. They've brought in a guy from Nagano, haven't they? Niki Urakami. He's played a lot in the last couple of years. I always find it very interesting when players sort of like move up from J3 to J2, for example, to see, you know, how they fit in, how they cope with the different standard and that kind of thing. And on the basis of the sort of like the departures from Corfu, it would seem as if this guy is going to get some playing time. So I think that's a name to watch there. Yeah, as I say, he's come from Nagano, 24. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay, so we agree that Corfu, we need to actually see them in action, don't we, before we can say more. But yeah, they don't look like they're going to be challenging the top two as it stands, I don't think. What about Kita Kyushu, Mike? Obviously, they had an absolutely fantastic season last year, even though they fell away at the end. They even threatened to be a top two challenger for part of the time, didn't they? With that, was it 10 or 11 matches winning run they had? Shinji Kobayashi is still the manager, but we had a few questions on Twitter about Kita Kyushu. Gabriele Agnello was asking, why haven't Shimizu S-Pulse brought back Daigo Takahashi, who's on loan at Kita Kyushu again this year? He was fantastic on loan there in 2020. And the Gamba Osaka blog in English, which we're pretty sure is Johnny Nickel. If we're wrong, we apologise, but we're crediting him for now. How badly have Kita Kyushu been damaged by their winter exodus? Now, they have lost five or six of last season's starters. Their team, their sort of fantastic team last year, was mainly built on loan players who've gone back. And they've also lost the key strikers. Akira Disaro's gone to Shimizu S-Pulse. Shuto Machino's gone to Shonan. So, yeah, what about Kita Kyushu, Mike?
Well, we must say thank you to Johnny and to Gabriele for their questions, which are very interesting. And we'll do our best to answer them. So I think with the sort of what I'm calling the Kita Kyushu diaspora that's taken place over this winter, it doesn't help. But I think it's only part of the story for two reasons. I have in front of me, John, I have a chart, and I kind of wish that I'd had it when we did the review pod, but I didn't, so here we are. It's a chart which is divided into three parts. On the left-hand side, the first part is a league table which covers the first half of last season. So that is game one to game 21. In the middle part of the chart, there is a league table which covers the second half of last season. That is games 22 to 42. And on the right-hand side of the chart, third part, there's basically a means of portraying the kind of pluses and minuses, the winners and losers between those two states. So the teams who really had good second half of the season, they're right at the top, and the teams who had really bad second half of the season, they're right at the bottom. So hopefully that's vaguely comprehensible.
Sounds good, but you're setting the bar very high for future guests, Mike, by preparing charts. I want anyone who's listening who might be a guest, you don't have to prepare charts. It's a totally option. No, nobody forced him to make it.
I didn't make it, I found it.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant.
It's not my chart. So, in the first half of last season, at the top of the left-hand side, Kitakyushu, they're top. So, after round 21 of last season, they were top of the division. If the league had stopped at that point and they'd started again on round 22 and continued to round 42, John, I'm going to ask you, it's a guessing game. Where do you think that Kitakyushu, bearing in mind that they finished fifth, as you've described, where do you think that they are in that ranking, including only matches 22 to 42?
This sounds like a trap question designed to catch out a poorly prepared podcast host. So I'll go with 14th.
I think that's actually a really decent guess, John. But the answer is actually 19th.
Wow, okay.
19th. So they got 23 fewer points in the second half of the season compared with the first. I think we can agree that's a lot.
So which version of Kitakyushu are you expecting to bowl up for 2021, Mike?
Right. So I think that the... this is the question, isn't it? And I think that another kind of point which has an impact on that is Shinji Kobayashi. So it feels to me like received wisdom is that he's a really good and a successful coach. And while I do agree with that, I think his success is within quite specific parameters. If clubs say to him, "Can you help us get promoted?" he could honestly answer, yes. I mean, let's not forget, he led Kitakyushu to the J3 title in 2019. I think that was the fifth promotion of his career. He knows what he's doing with that stuff. But if clubs ask him, can you help us be competitive and establish ourselves in a higher division? That's a different question, and it has a different answer, which his record demonstrates, because he can't do it. So although the fifth place finish, you know, it's all very laudable and impressive, I think in a sense it's a quirk of the maths of J2. And I know how hot you are on the quirk of the maths of things, John.
Yeah, I can feel the angry Twitter responses will be flooding in, I feel.
But it feels to me as if the second half of the season that I've just described is kind of more representative of where Kitakyushu are now and their sort of trajectory coming into 2021. So, yeah, the point about the winter exodus is important, but I think it's only a part of the story. And Kobayashi is facing the sort of season in which he has no real track record. And in terms of the squad, he's pretty much starting from scratch.
Yeah, I think this is really good analysis. And if I'm perfectly honest, beyond the levels that we usually do on the pod, so it's really interesting to hear. I think on Gabriele's question, which I'll answer before I forget, I think the key to why Shimizu didn't bring back Daigo Takahashi is probably something to do with Akira Disaro moving to Shimizu. I just wonder if that might have been a condition or part of that deal. That Daigo Takahashi gets to spend. Well, I think maybe he gets to spend one more season at Kitakyushu, and that helped Shimizu to pip other clubs, presumably to Disaro, who is very impressive and probably had quite a few clubs to choose from in the winter window. I think the points about Kitakyushu are valid, Mike. I'm really interested to hear your thoughts. And I think I wasn't expecting to be mentioning this so early, but probably it's time to mention. Four relegation places this season. And if Kitakyushu, so many players who were regular starters last year have gone, we know that they're going to be changing goalkeepers because three goalkeepers have gone out, three goalkeepers have come in. They do have obviously lots of ins, but the quality looks like a downgrade on what they had last year. So we'll see. I think I'm not saying that I think they'll be bottom four. I think they'll be okay, but fifth place again is quite unlikely, I think, based on my gut feeling, but also your very impressive analysis. Okay, we'll move before we relegate anybody else. Let's move on and talk about Iwata, Mike, who in my head are, are a big club, and I think historically a big club. Iwata finishing last season in sixth place. Masakazu Suzuki took over midway through the season, didn't he, when Fernando Hubero was sacked. He's the manager again for this year. What do you think about Iwata? Sixth place was pretty disappointing from them, wasn't it, last year?
Masakazu Suzuki's Iwata, everyone's second favourite J2 team. Not
Well,
really.
yeah.
They're a bit boring, aren't they, John? A bit boring.
Well, they were last season, but I think he had a firefighting job, didn't he? When he came in last year, because they were heading the direction of travel under Hubero was the wrong direction at a rapid pace, I feel. So I think he might. I'm kind of curious to see if they're more expansive or more entertaining this year. But yeah, I'm sensing that you're not sharing my optimism on that.
I think it's possible, but I think they've perhaps. They, I wouldn't say they put their eggs in one basket, but there are not too many. I mean, it seemed to me as if they seem quite a sort of like a languid kind of team, not much energy, not much sort of dynamism, and they haven't really done an enormous amount in the close season either. I mean, again, we've got this sort of like slightly random sort of. I wonder what the new foreign striker is going to be like. That's Fabian Gonzalez. He's from Atletico Nacional in Colombia. Could be great. Could be not great. Don't know. I wonder how he'll play alongside Lukian. Who knows? But I think that there are two interesting signings that they've made. And they could have a big impact. I said earlier on that I was interested in players who move up from J3 to J2. And one of those is relevant here, and that's Naoki Kanema. He comes from Sagamihara. He's 23. Last year was his rookie season, and he played every minute of every game. Mainly in that kind of Boranchi role, a sort of defensive midfield role, Boranchi as they referred to in Japanese. And I think a really important part of that, shall we say, dogged Sagamihara team's sort of strong spine, which I think we'll refer back to again shortly. And he played alongside a more experienced player in that kind of role, and I think that Suzuki could take a similar strategy. All these guys like Yamada and Yamamoto, they're on the wrong side of 30, but they've been retained. I mean, obviously, Yasuhito Endo is the wrong side of 40.
Yeah, he's a wily midfielder, isn't he? I think he having him in the squad sort of elevates them a little bit more, I think, in terms of prediction.
And I would have thought that somebody like some of the younger players that they have brought in, like Kanuma. I wonder if some of the university students, maybe they're going to turn out to be really good. I would have thought that they would be keen to play alongside Endo. That's a sales point for them.
Yeah, let me pose you a question from the Gambara Osaka blog in English, aka Johnny Nickel again, Mike. If Jubilo had a different head coach, would that give them status as a favourite to win promotion? So how much are they hampered by having Masakazu Suzuki in charge?
That's it. I think it depends, because the fact is that I think that when we were doing the season review, Didn't Stewart give them an E or something like that?
I think he was not impressed. Thumbs down.
And to me, I kind of like took it at face value in the sense that they were struggling, which led to the coach being sacked and Suzuki being appointed. And then, you know, they finished in sixth place, which was the in a normal season that would have got them in the playoffs. So I kind of don't really, I didn't really enjoy watching them when I saw them last season, but I haven't really got a downer on Suzuki apart from the fact that they seem a bit boring because his results are, you know, surely he did what he was brought in to do. He was successful in that respect.
Yeah, I think the problem that he might run into this season, Suzuki, is that, you know, there's no playoffs again. It has to be top two. Promotion will be the goal, and you're going to have to be a bit more expansive. You're going to have to play a little bit more in order to score enough goals to get into that top two, I think. So we're basically fudging this question, Johnny. We probably won't be able to answer until April or May when we see how expansive they're.
I think it probably depends on if these sort of guys coming in are able to give them that energy. So I said that I think that there are two players who might do that. So there's the Kanawa guy who I've just been talking about, and Yuto Suzuki.
Yes.
So he's joined on a full transfer from Karasaki, but he was on loan last season at Matsumoto. And he played mainly on the right-hand side of the midfield for them. He's quite a bit of a utility player, but he was mainly on the right. He's quite sort of, do you know him? He's quite a sort of progressive, quite a sort of forward-thinking kind of player.
Yes, I do. Yes.
Got more starts when Shibata took over in the middle of the season there. Could score more goals, but I think he's a decent player. And I think if we're looking for Iwata to become less sort of, you know, ponderous, then you've got to try these guys out because the old guard are not going to give it to you.
I think one transfer out that they might come to regret is, Nakano, who's gone to Omiya. I think the idea is they brought in Yuki Otsu from Yokohama Marinos, ostensibly, I think, is his replacement. But for me, Otsu is kind of a bit of a busted flush at this point. I don't think he's really done anything for 2 or 3 years, possibly even longer. So I think, Seiya Nakano will be the kind of player I would have wanted to keep. Perhaps that was out of the coach's hands and it was time to move on. But I think that's one that both eyebrows were raised when I saw that Seiya Nakano was moving to Omiya. What do we think then on Iwata? Might top six again, maybe?
Hard to say. Yes, but I think it will be a struggle for them to be higher than that, unless everything clicks with the new guys.
I imagine they'll be slugging it out with Kofu for sixth place 10 months from now. Yes, nil-nil probably. Yes. Let's move on then, Mike, because I really want to talk about the team that finished in seventh place last year. That's Montedio Yamagata. Their manager, Kiyotaka Ishimaru, really impressed me with the team that he put together last year. Quite a few players have come in, a few players have gone out, and we had a question again from Gabriele, who pleasingly double-dipped and asked us two questions. Thanks, Gabriele, that keeps us going. Are Montedio Yamagata the dark horses in the promotion race? In 2020, they came seventh and basically didn't have a real goalkeeper, which is harsh but fair, probably. I'll just tell you now, my notes, I've written possible dark horses for a top two finish in my notes.
You go that far.
Yeah. What do you think?
I've got an outside bet for promotion. So I think that the straight answer to Gabriele's question is yes. I agree. An exciting team. Interesting to talk about. Interesting 2020. I've still got my charts here, by the way, actually, John. Do you know what? They improved in the second half of the season by 16 points.
An inverse Kitakyushu.
Absolutely. Alongside Matsumoto, but that's another story. Yamagata. First thing to say is kind of an obvious point, but Vinicius Araujo, he's good, isn't he?
Yeah, someone on a pod was slagging him off at the start of last season, but don't know who that was. Well, obviously some kind of idiot, yeah.
Some kind of idiot, yeah. But in fairness to that individual, I mean, he didn't have a good start. And he really sort of like picked things up as the season went along. But one thing that I'm really impressed about him is not just that, you know, he's a good player and he's a good goal scorer, but he seems like a real sort of team player. I'm always interested in how guys like him, you know, the sort of like the foreigner who's been brought in to score goals, how they relate to other players. For example, when there's a goal, somebody else has scored, and what's their reaction to that? A teammate has scored, and he always looks really happy, and you know, as if he's just kind of like one of the boys, and a teammate has scored, and yay, that's great, and he shares in that, and he wants to congratulate his teammate. And I think I like that. I like to see that. I think it's impressive. And it makes me kind of think maybe he sort of like fits in a really sort of like positive way. So I think he's a really interesting player. But I mentioned early on, so I'm going to go on about some J3 players who've been promoted. And there are three here, and one of them I hope will knock Gabrielli's question out of the park, because Victor looks set to solve the problem of Yamagata and their goalkeeper. He had a really good season at Sagamihara, didn't he? And I think same with Kanema, he was a key part of that spine which made them so difficult to beat. I remember Stuart commenting about Yudai Tanaka at Akita. Sometimes you got the impression that he would be personally insulted if he were to concede a goal. And Victor last year, he gave off that kind of that same sense, as if he was like saying to opposition front players, "You are not getting past me." So I think that you know, that to me, that's good news. Obviously, he has played in J2 before with Gifu, so it's not unfamiliar territory to him, but the transfer is from J3. The second of the interesting players from J3, Hikaru Nakahara. He was the right-hand side of Kumamoto's front three, and he scored one of my J3 goals of the season. Lovely exchange of passes, peach of a left-foot curler against Hachinohe. Lots of skill, lots of ability. Really interesting seeing him. And obviously his former teammate, Taniguchi, over at Niigata. J3 signing number three, quickly, is Masamichi Hayashi. He's a very sort of direct kind of striker, powerful right-foot shot. He was on loan at Imabari from Tottori last season, scored 8 in 18 starts. The coach who you were mentioning, Ishimaru, he tends to play three up top. And a front three of Nakahara, Hayashi and Vinicius Araujo looks like it could be pretty tasty.
I think what I really like about Yamagata is, firstly, they were fun to watch last year. And, Vinicius Araujo was a really big part of that. I really enjoyed watching him. He was one of my, you know, personal players of the season. Their recruitment in the winter has been very kind of under the radar, but very intelligent. They haven't, I don't think, spent big money, but every single player that they brought in it makes sense. You can see where they're going to slot into the side. And they're all ready to come in and play straight away. I mean, we talked about some other teams where it seems like they're filling out the squad, you know, or they're bringing in players that are not better than what they already have, or are just going to be understudies to players that are already there. I think with Yamagata, you know, six or seven players that have come in who you wouldn't be amazed to see starting a game, you know, round one at the end of this month. So I think that the recruitment that they've done has been excellent, and they haven't really lost. I mean, I was sure they were going to lose Vinicius Araujo. They kept him. They've lost one or two other players, but I don't think anybody that they haven't been able to replace or cope with. So, yeah, if everything goes well, I expect to see them up at the top end of the table. And I think it sounds like you're in agreement, Mike.
Yeah, I think so. I think that Shun Nakamura, he was like a central midfield player, kind of maybe a bit more of an attacking midfield player. I think he's a really decent player. He's gone to Shonan. The guys on Big Pod mentioned, Ryoma Watanabe, he's gone to FC Tokyo. I always liked Taiga Maekawa. He didn't play very much, but whenever I saw him, I really sort of noticed him, or he did something which was very eye-catching to me. He's not a particularly significant player with them or anything, but I just really, really sort of liked him. But no, I agree. They seem to have bought very wisely, and I'm really looking forward to seeing them.
No, same here. I think we can move swiftly on. Talking of promotion contenders, Mike, let's talk about Kyoto Sanga, eighth place last season, lower than I think pretty much everybody expected. They've responded to that by changing manager. It's the former Shonan boss, Cho Kuije, who's in charge now. Well known as basically a winner who doesn't take any nonsense. I think we can put it that way. Quite a few players in and out. I think they're going to be in a strong position for promotion this year, although I tipped them last year and they let me down, so I'm a little bit cautious. Charlotte Patterson at Kirby Hazard on Twitter asks us, what went wrong for Sanga last year? What do they need to do this season to try and challenge for promotion? And she adds, yeah, quite very true. They've kept Peter Utaka, which is probably the part one of their promotion strategy. But what about Kyoto, Mike?
So I think that in terms of the first part of Charlotte's question, I think maybe you answered this on maybe it was, I can't remember if it was the review pod or one of the sort of like the winter pods. And I think you said something like they had a weak heart, something like that. And I think that gets to the nub of the matter. They felt like a bit of a two-man team. And Peter Utaka and Jordi Bice's teammates, they kind of didn't really offer enough for the team to mount a promotion. And, you know, as you've just said, the new guy has come in, taken over as coach, and it's impossible to say that he doesn't know how to get from J2 because he's done it twice. And I think that what he's done is come into the club, seen what's required, made a plan, and has started to execute it. I'm really impressed with what he's done. They've released fringe players rather than any first team regulars, and there's an overall sense of an upgrade. The biggest players to leave are Jun Kanakubo, who's gone to Mito, a player who I incidentally like very much, but I can see that he's probably not going to get you promoted, and a centre back Uebis, who's gone to Oita. But I think that they've just given themselves options. They've given themselves options. So in supporting Utaka, which he didn't really have, you know, what percentage of goals, of their goals did he score? It was some last season. It was some crazy percentage. Because he was basically doing it on his own. So they brought in like Tenma Matsuda, Hiroto Nakagawa. They've both got experience in that sort of supporting role. They've both come from Shonan. In other words, the coach knows what he's getting. And it's also Naoto Misawa. He's got to step up from Tottori, bit of an all-action attacking midfield player. Another Shonan player, Kosuke Takatomi, who's come from Urawa, maybe for a sort of like a central role. So I think that basically what he's done is strengthen the midfield in order to address that weak heart of 2020. And, you know, he understands what it means and what is required to get promoted from J2. So I think they're going to be challenging for promotion, yeah.
I completely agree. I think there's a slight X factor here, which is that Kyoto do have a kind of recent or fairly recent history of bottling games from time to time, for want of a better word. If you remember, I can't remember which year, but they lost the playoff final to Tokushima Vortis, you know, back in the day. I was at that game, and Kyoto weren't inferior in any other capacity than, you know, mental strength, really. They bottled that game. You know, they were beaten 13-1 by Kashua Reysol, of course, an infamous game. Of course, most of the players are different now and the coach is different, but I think it's weird how these things can kind of linger around the club even when players and managers change. And I think with Kyoto, you're going to see something very interesting this year, which is basically an irresistible force meeting an immovable object, which you can say a lot of things about Cho Kijé, and I won't, because this is a season preview pod. He's not a bottler. So something's going to have to give between Kyoto and Cho Kijé this year. But I will just add as a cautionary note, you know, Jeff United have had this bottling problem for about a decade. They brought in a manager last year, Yoon Jung-hwan, who is also definitely not a bottler, and it with mixed results, I think it's fair to say. So we'll see. But we'll say the quality of players at Kyoto is much higher than the quality of players at Jeff right now. So it's not a direct comparison, but I just mean for illustrative purposes. And I think in goal, they made a good signing. Haruki Fukushima's come in from Urawa on loan. I don't know anything about him, but I do know that the guy that played most of the games last year, we talked about before. His name escapes me right now. Tomohiro, the goalkeeper, the young goalkeeper who played most of the games last year, really struggled at times. So I think having some help for him in goal is important. And now Tomisawa, you're right to pick up from Tottori. Of course, he played at YSCC before that, and I saw him a lot. And he's ready for prime time. He's a really good player. So I also think they're promotion contenders, but I will add the caveat of Kyoto do have a habit of bottling when the pressure's on.
And they need their main guys to stay fit.
Yes, I think Utaka has to stay fit. Moriwaki at the back, when he was injured last year, it was a problem. They were playing that three-back system. Losing Keya Sento as well, back to Yokohama Marinos. Of course, he was only on loan last year, but he made a positive impact straight away. And he was, you know, you mentioned players helping out Utaka up front. He was the only one, really, who was doing that. So I guess Taketomi and Nakagawa coming in from Ura and Shonan respectively are going to help in that area. But I agree. I think they're promotion contenders, but I don't think it's cut and dried for the reasons that I think both of us have mentioned. Okay. I'm sure we're going to talk about Kyoto a lot more during the season, by the way, Mike, as well. Let's round off part one of our season preview then, Mike, by talking about Mito. They surprised me and probably a lot of other people in finishing ninth last season under Tadahiro Akiba, a coach who really knows his young players, as evidenced from their transfers in this winter window as well. I think they're going to be in mid-table-ish again without too many problems this year. But we had a question on this from Daniel, I think, Nagasaki Blue and Orange, at @V_Varen_EN. On Twitter, will Mito's new signings on attack be able to compensate for the loss of Yamaguchi and Pitbull, who've left? And is there any reason to believe their defence will be better than last year? He's asking because he thought they were poor collectively on defence last year, not just with individual players. So what about Mito, Mike?
So they've brought in three very different forwards, haven't they? I've described, in the green room, we mentioned Towa Yamane, didn't we, John? I've attached to him the adjective terrier-like. And I've got an adjective for Mizuki Ando as well. He's burly. And Noah Kenshin Brown is slight. Yamane, I really like him. I think he's quite an impressive player. He's come from Cerezo on loan. He was at Kanazawa on loan last season. I remember watching one of the highlights of one of their games, and in which there was a cross from the left-hand side, and it eluded Lucao, who was in front of him, and Yamane, who is 167 centimeters tall, headed the ball in. So that was quite an interesting, funny thing. So with Andol, I thought he really caught the eye at Machida. He was really, I thought he was a good player. And amazingly, only 21. I was astonished when I realised that that was the case. He really carries himself like a more sort of mature player. But, you know, he's obviously been squeezed out by the signings that Machida have made. He's a big guy, opportunist striker, got a lot of composure. And then we've got this Noah Kenshin Brown. He has signed on, I think, a permanent deal from Marinos. He was a rookie last season at Senaki, and I think that was a tough place to be a rookie. So he made 18 starts there, scored 2 goals, and I'm going to guess he'll need a further look. That's what I thought about the forwards at Mito. Anything that you wanted to add about that, John?
No, I think on Tower Yamane, I'd go for barrel-chested, I think, is the adjective that I had in mind. He's a bit of a pocket battleship, isn't he? yeah, and for Noah Kenshin Brown, I had willowy.
Willowy for his. Better than better
yeah,
than
but I think that's true, and there's some interesting options there. I think, yeah, everything that you've said about the forwards coming in, I agree with. I think obviously losing Kazuma Yamaguchi, he was on loan from Kashima until he had that, you know, knee ligament injury. Just a absolute baller, basically. He was brilliant for them, so it's always going to be a big miss. And a Pitbull as well, who I think certainly I wanted to make fun of him because of his name, but he was just too good at football to be made fun of and demanded to be taken seriously. He's another player whose loan has finished, and I don't think he's coming back for next year. So I think they're definitely. It sounds like I'm sort of denigrating Ando, Brown, and Yamane, but I think it is a kind of downgrade from Pitbull and Yamaguchi. But it's I think by me, if we keep in context that we're talking about Mito, they've managed that downgrade as well as they possibly could, I think.
Yeah, and I think that you know, players come and players go, and one season's team is going to evolve away from the previous season. So, you know, how are Kashiwa going to deal with losing Michael Olunga? Well, you know, they'll deal with it, and they'll be a different team because they won't have that kind of player, but they'll have other players, and they'll find a style to fit those players.
Okay, how about Daniel's question about the defence? Then obviously that was a problem. Fair to say it was a problem area last year. Now Nduka Boniface has moved to Tokyo Verdy, so he was certainly a very eye catching presence at centre back for Mito last year. I'm still not sure how good he actually is, because he seemed to be very up and down with his form in the games that I saw. Jefferson Tabinus has come in, hasn't he? From Kawasaki, although he spent, I think, is this the same player that was at Gamba's under 23s last year, right? And did a lot of in inverted commas building from the back with them. So what do you think about Mito's back line?
Yeah, so I'm rather relieved to hear you say that about Boniface and Duka, because I have to say, although, yes, he's an eye-catching player. So eye-catching sounds like a bit of a euphemism, really. I didn't think he was very good. It just seemed as if every time that I saw him, he seemed to make mistakes and get his team into trouble or, you know, give away goals. But I think that more broadly, you know, Tadahiro Akiba's approach to defence looks pretty set. He might change around with the formation elsewhere in the team, but he's a back four kind of guy. So I think that if there is any sort of improvement to be found, it's probably down to the players. To me, although Boniface Nduka might be, you know, somebody that you are aware of, in terms of the Mito team generally, I'm not sure if on the pitch it's a particularly big loss, in my opinion. I mean, on the flanks, Yota Maejima has gone back to Yokohama FC after his loan, and Ryo Toyama, he looked a pretty decent player on the left. He's gone to Matsumoto. And in terms of dealing with the defence, Akiba's brought in a couple of university students and kids from the youth team, plus, as you've just said, John, Jefferson Tabinas. Is he that good either?
Well, it's really interesting you say that, because again, based on, I mean, we should bring in Stu and ask him, because he's just played at Gifu in the past. But yeah, he had a tough job as being the kind of leader of the back, the back line sort of unit at Gamba's under-23s last year. And again, depending on the game that you watched, you could come away with a completely different opinion. In some cases, even depending on the half of the game that you watched, you might come away with a different opinion. And this is something we should probably say, you know, with the younger players, consistency is elusive at times, and last season might not be the fairest test because the games came so thick and fast. Everything was very complicated schedule wise. So, to be brutally honest, I'm not sure. I think with Tabinas and with Boniface and Duca, there's definitely a player in there. You know, I don't think they would have made it this far up the sort of professional ladder without having something. But yeah, I'm really going to be looking closely to see both of their sort of trajectories this season. I think the point that you make, though, is very well made about Mito, that it's a kind of system. I mean, Daniel's questioned, is there any reason to believe the defence will be better this year? No, not really, because it's a system thing, the way that Akiba plays, I think. And you often see the back line tends to be unprotected at times, or the two centre-backs tend to be a little bit isolated. And I think that's just, it's just a kind of, in the same way that when you watch Kofu, when they play with their three centre-backs, sometimes they're overloaded down the flanks because the three central defenders are pretty narrow at times. And yeah, I think it almost doesn't matter who the personnel are at that point. I will just give a quick shout-out to another defender who stayed, which is Jelani Rishon Sumiyoshi, who I think is actually probably the most promising of the players that played in the back line last year. He's ostensibly a right back, but he can play in the centre as well if he's switched inside. And yeah, I think he was actually the most consistent of that crop of younger players at the back for Mito last year. But I think it's a system issue / problem / choice that Akiba makes. So no, I'm still expecting the goals against column to be pretty hair-raising for Mito in 2021.
Yeah, I think I think that's fair. And on balance, I think that they will probably score fewer goals, even though, you know, there's a lot of interest there, and they've kept Nakayama. He got 13 goals, I think it was, last season. You know, a very, very respectable record. But I just don't think they're going to score quite as many as they did, remembering that they were actually the top scorers in the division last season. It's hard to see them replicating that. So I think that there will be a bit of a decline. But, you know, but the fact is, over the last few seasons, it's not last year is not a flash in the pan. They're a mid-table team, comfortably.
Yeah, I think I was very down on them this time last year, and I think it was just because I didn't know much about Akiba the manager, and I didn't know much about a lot of the young players. But having seen, it was in a similar position for me to Yamagata with Ishimaru, where I just didn't know much about the coach, and then I tend to be very cautious or negative. But yeah, he really impressed me with the football he put on show at Mito last year. So I don't think they'll be ninth again, but I think they'll be mid-table. And I think, yeah, with Nakayama's goals, help from some other new forwards who've come in, I don't see them having any relegation worries. Lower mid table is probably about right, I think. Yeah. Okay, Mike, I think we've done the business. We've talked about last season's top seven. I think we'll wrap up our first part of the season preview here to give everybody time to catch breath, and we'll be back for part two. Hopefully, you'll join me again. We'll talk about the teams that finished from 10th down to 16th. In last season's J2 table and what their prospects are in 2021. Before we wrap up, is there any kind of general comments you want to make? I know you maybe had a few general points you wanted to get off your chest.
Yeah, so just thinking generally about the new season. I mean, there are a few things that are more exciting than a new football season, but one of them might be anticipation of it. It's just great, isn't it? But I think that similar to the remarks that Ben and Sam were making in their fine J1 previews on Big Pod, I can see overall perhaps in J2 bit of a lowering of standards for two reasons. Firstly, because no relegation out of J1 means that the two best teams in J2, Tokushima and Fukuoka, have been replaced by the two best teams in J3, obviously Akita and Sagamihara. And with respect to those teams, the overall quality level of the division is therefore reduced. I mean, a bit more subjectively, the second reason, on paper, it seems to me, I don't know what you think about this, John, but the number of squads which look stronger at the start of this year than they were at the end of last year seems to me to be pretty small. I don't know what you think about that, the general.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. I think we're going to talk about this a lot more in probably part three of our season preview, especially when we talk about Sagamihara, who appear to be, running the white flag quite quickly in terms of
Yeah,
survival.
I think Sagamihara are a very interesting team, but I think overall it has the makings of a really interesting season. We've talked about in the 2020 review about the closeness of the table and a big bunch of teams, 4th to 20th, were separated only by 16 points, and I think that a consequence of that is a lot of teams might feel that they have a crack at promotion if they can get off to a good start. I think that's the case. As a really crude motivational device, it's difficult for a coach to say to his players, to get promoted, you have to be as good as Tokushima or Fukuoka. But it's a lot easier to say, you have to be a point better than Corfu. Because that was all, that's kind of like, with Tokushima and Fukuoka out of the picture, that's kind of all that's required. In reality, I do expect that the two teams to win promotion this year will come from a set bunch. But this is J2. Anything can happen. Early season confidence can sometimes get you a long way. And I think that the other reason why it's going to be a really interesting season, just to finish, is the doubling of the number of relegation spots, 2-4. If you apply that number to last season, there were a pair of teams, Yamaguchi and Ehime, who finished away off the pace. But the other teams to finish in the bottom four, Gunma and Machida, they were 5 points off mid-table. So I think that the relegation battle this year could involve a large proportion of the division, and I think some well-established teams could be in for a very nasty shock as a consequence. I think that's going to be really interesting and exciting. And then we've got the wild card of Akita Sagamihara making their debuts at this level. And as J2 watchers, we're all set up for a season of fun.
Mike, you've set it up brilliantly. I almost don't want to add anything in case I make it sound less exciting. No, that sounds brilliant. And yeah, I think we've got a lot more previewing to do. So hopefully that the listeners will come back and join us for part two and part three in short order once we can record those. But thanks for all your help and analysis in this pod, Mike. It's been really interesting. I know that the listeners probably know my thoughts on most of these teams already. So to get fresh perspectives are always really good. Where can people follow you on Twitter if they want more of this sort of thing, Mike?
Oh, thank you, John. That's very kind. I'm not sure if I particularly do more of this sort of thing, but I'm go all me at Ardija.
Fantastic, brilliant. Okay, I think yeah, we'll wrap up here, Mike. We're over our allotted recording time, I think. So yeah, hope everybody enjoyed the show. We were able to answer some good listener questions as well, which is always gives us pleasure, I think. Hopefully, yeah, we'll be back again soon with part two of our J2 season preview. But yeah, please continue listening and join the show. And if you're one of our patrons, we really appreciate that. Helps us to keep the lights on and the mics running. So thank you for your support, listening, downloading, and even with cold hard currencies, much appreciated. Yeah, that's all for this week, for this show. Thanks for listening. Yeah, and we'll talk soon. Bye for now.